So that is the basis of ignorance. Like, where are you going? I don't know. Ask the horse. That there would be some kind of sense object or, you know, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, mind, idea. And immediately the horse starts going and consciousness is dragged that way. Because it seems like there's a self there. I always think this. I always do that. I never do this. I never do that. We all do that. But it's not really an I. It's a mind state that in that moment, due to these conditions, wouldn't do that. We don't identify it as that, do we? Not unless we're practicing awareness. Not unless we're aware. Oh, this is coolness. Oh, this is a soreness in the back. Shoveling snow on a cold winter day. Your back starts to hurt. Oh, this is pain.
Period.
Not, oh, I'm not becoming it. Not letting it become you when you're riding that way. Identify it as something that's arising as an experience. Whatever is, whatever comes into being is based on causes and conditions. What does that mean?
That's temporary.
It means that it needs certain circumstances in order to arise. Whatever is conditional is impermanent. Everything is conditional. If there was anything that wasn't conditional, it wouldn't be part of this world. Everything about this world, spring, summer, autumn, winter, is it true? How a body comes into being, how it exists, how it passes away, it's all conditional. So to actually think that there's some I in charge is like asking for trouble. Does that make sense? So that's what the first step of the Paticca Samuppada is talking about, dependent on ignorance. How does that start? I'm going to go to page one here. Buddhism, in page one, Buddhism teaches that all compounded things come into being, presently exist, and cease, dependent on conditions and causes. Does everybody have a copy of this? Do you want a copy?
Yeah.
Yeah. Page four and on these ones. This was one of the ones that got printed by the McKenzie computer. But I got everything but page four here, so that'll start now. When he was going to get a new ink thing. Okay. So on page one, Buddhism, can you see it there? Buddhism teaches that all compounded things come into being, presently exist, and cease, dependent on conditions and causes. Is that what it says here? Compare the truth of this saying with that off-quoted verse of the Arahat Thera Asaji, one of the Buddha's first five disciples. His question was, what is your teacher's doctrine? What does he proclaim? And this was the Thera's answer. whatever things proceed from a cause, the Tathagata has explained the cause thereof and the cessation. This is the teaching of the great sage. And how do you see the cause of something? Only if you practice awareness. If you don't practice awareness, you're caught.
Where are you going? I don't know. Ask the horse.
If you can't see that something is arising, it's impermanent, you're caught. Is that true? You're not making a choice yourself about where you want the horse to go. There's a difference. The vast difference. So dependent on ignorance, on not knowing, arises sankhara. Sankhara and this ignorance or delusion is one of the root, page 2, is one of the root causes of all unwholesome actions, all moral defilements. All conceivable wrong notions are the result of ignorance. Independently of this crowning corruption, no ill action, whether mental, verbal, or physical, could be performed. That is why ignorance is enumerated as the first link of the chain of the 12-fold paticca-samuppada. Nevertheless, ignorance should not be regarded as a prima causa, a first beginning or an ultimate origin of things. It is certainly not the first cause. There is no conception of a first cause in Buddhist thought. They say, as my beloved teacher used to say, from the very no beginning. He used to say that all the time, didn't he? The doctrine of paticca-samuppada can be illustrated as a circle, for it is a cycle of existence. In a circle, any given point may be taken as a starting point. And we'll go to the next paragraph. Ignorance, the first factor of the series, is not the sole condition for volitional formations. Volitional formations, and he calls it here rebirth producing volitional formations, and here he calls it he calls it mental concocting. Mental concocting. You know, concoction is something you make out of usually a drink or something. With ignorance as a condition, mental concocting arises. And he says, dependent on ignorance, it arises rebirth producing volitional formations. There's already something going on in that phrase, rebirth producing, that makes it sound like there's a self continuing, doesn't it? For most of us. I'm going to be born again with the same, oh, this is my karma, blah, blah, blah. Rather than dependent on ignorance arises these sort of mental, this sort of mental, what would you call it, collection of possibilities. So you see something, ignorance arises. You feel something, ignorance arises. I am. And then this whole mental concoction comes into being. Which becomes, from that arises the action that happens next. So that's why he calls it rebirth linking karma. With the mental concoctions, there's almost immediately a reaction. Isn't there, when you have a thought, isn't there almost immediately a reaction? Either push it down or jump on it or ignore it or find somebody else to take care of it.
It's almost like a chemical change and things just move right away.
Yeah.
So he's talking about rebirth.
From moment to moment.
Not from lifetime to lifetime.
And moment to moment is lifetime to lifetime.
Reincarnation is...
Moment to moment is lifetime to lifetime. Every moment a new self arises. Dependent on the last condition, a new one arises. Or reformation of the body, that's happening all the time too. But we don't see it. We think of the self as fixed and therefore... my life, and then my death, and then, you know, in a previous life I was, blah, blah, blah. And there can be mental volitions that pass from consciousness to consciousness. But it doesn't necessarily, they don't necessarily pass in the same group. It's not an I. It's not a fixed little bubble with all these mental conditions that move together.
But there never was an I anyway.
No, there never was an I anyway. But there are mental, what did you put?
Concoctions.
I love that. I think that's a brilliant way of describing it. But it's hard to get rid of the idea of an I, isn't it? Have you noticed?
I have.
It feels like an I. Whatever one is there, it feels like the I. And then the doorbell rings and something else happens and then there's another I. It's got to be the most subtle and profound point of Buddha Dharma, which is why I keep harping on it. So I hope you actually give it some thought during the day and try to see what choices you have about what I is arising. Because that's going to condition the next moment birth, which is going to condition the next moment birth. The stream of coming into being, existing, passing away. It's a stream. Is a stream made of one thing called water? Or is it made of a bunch of little drops that come from all over the place?
Right.
Okay. Is this clear? Are you clear on this? Do you have any questions, answers, comments, or complaints here?
So it's the intention from moment to moment that carries through to the next moment.
The intention is the most profound. That's why the Buddha said karma, action, is chetana, intention, volition, desire, whatever motive is present.
So if it's for the benefit of all beings and with a full heart, that's about as good as you can get then.
Yeah.
It's the best you can do.
Yeah, it is. That's what the rosary of Genoese, remember?
Yeah.
Each bead is a moment of consciousness. And the thread is a bunch of pieces of thread. Bunch of pieces woven together to make one thread. The bunch of pieces are the motive. From one, so if you make it a habit of making your one of your motives from moment to moment kindness, pretty soon that's how the whole stream infinitely flows. So the figure eight of the rosary, this hand is loving kindness. Is it more clear to you now? Are you seeing it better now? I don't know. I hope so. Sometimes it's useful to six times a day stop and make an aspiration. Just for no reason whatsoever. So that you bring that more to the fore of your mind. More into the focus. And six times a day, it's easy, isn't it? You get you set your clock to go ding, your watch to go ding every 2 hours or something, and just stop, make that. May I be a bastard to every, oh no, no, may I be kind to all beings. And then the next thing, oh, right, may I be kind to all beings. And then pretty soon it starts to have a profound effect on your life. Because all beings includes yourself first. You can't do it to yourself, you can't do it to anyone else, can you? If you can't be kind to yourself when you're giving to somebody else, aren't you hoping to get something back? Can you hear me? A little?
Yeah.
Should I speak louder?
It's up to you.
No, it's not. I'm asking you.
I can only hear about 75%. I can't hear what you're saying. But that's me.
Yeah, and this is me, whoever that is. And that's her. And here we are all together. And I'm talking to you too, Otto.
Okay.
Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints here? I'm really going over this point over and over and over because it's got to be the whole crux of really understanding what this teaching is about and what Buddhism is about. Buddhism is not about whether or not there is a soul or a self, whether or not there is a God or a no God, whether or not you should be Republican or Democratic. It's not about any of those divisions. What is it about?
The consciousness.
Okay, but that's a funny word. In Buddhism, there are different types. There's the intellect, there's one kind of consciousness. There's the consciousness of each of the sense doors. You know, Hey Vajra has 8 heads, the 8 types of consciousness. Which one? We can use it, there isn't a word in English, but we could use the word mind. What is mind? What is the mind that has those views?
So the 8 that you're talking about is referring to different views?
8 types of consciousness.
8 types of consciousness.
6 sense doors. Each of them there's I object, and consciousness of that. The consciousness is in your brain. The eye consciousness only works with the visual. Ear consciousness only works with the hearing. So forth. Remember those videos on the 6 senses? Do you remember them?
Yeah.
And what did they show you? That you see something, that your eye perceives something and sends it to the brain. The brain tells you what you see.
Mm-hmm.
The consciousness for seeing is in here. So there's like these the 5 sense objects, and then the 6th one, the mind that tells you everything, the intellect. And then the 7th one, the sense of self, ego. And then the 8th one, sometimes it's called the storehouse consciousness, sometimes it's called the original mind.
So is that like the collective unconscious? In Western
when it's storehouse consciousness, yeah. It would be collective unconscious. Yeah, exactly. Have I gone off the track,
nope.
Or are we okay here?
Yep.
You'll let me know if I go off the track, will you? Huh?
It'll be that blank look. Comes across my face.
Okay. So the idea often put forward with mental commitments and is an idea of karma that's going to follow you lifetime after lifetime. But the real point of from my profound studying of this and this person's teaching, not this one that I printed one that I gave you. There is no such thing as a previous life and the next life that goes over three lifetimes. This lifetime, it was last time I was a ballet dancer, and this one I ate ballet, and the next one I'm probably going to be an orchestra leader. And it's not like that. It's like from moment to moment, there was a continuous rebirth. Because there's no fixed identity. It's a little deep, isn't it? Is it okay?
It's like being dropped into a pot of soup. And trying to identify everything that's in there. and then identify the story that's behind everything that's in there.
Not so much that, being able to be aware that there is a story. And then decide to make your story kindness. It's being aware, like when you were talking yesterday about wanting to get these people to see something.
Mm-hmm.
The story behind that was that you wanted them to.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily that they wanted to.
Right.
So then after you do that in a certain number of times, then you got to say, is this kindness that I want them to see my way? Okay, when I'm teaching somebody when they're on retreat, I'll tell them something if I think it would be important for them to know. If they decide that they don't want to hear it, that's their business.
So you let it go.
Because life is a way better teacher than I will ever be. There is... You know, life is so profoundly more a better teacher. If it's something moral, I will tell them, if you insist on doing something immoral, please do not do it here. If it's something that I think they should be paying attention to, but it's not, you know, killing or stealing or lying or, you know, then I will tell them, sometimes I will tell them three times. After that, it's their choice. You know what that does?
What brings it up in their face?
No, it makes me very aware of exactly choosing the moment I'm going to tell them where they're most likely to hear me. It makes me pay attention to whether or not they can hear. How will I describe this?
So if you only have three chances to tell them,
mm-hmm.
and you want to pick your times when you're going to tell them.
When they're most likely to have your mind open to hearing you.
Because you don't want to waste the times you tell them.
If your pants are on fire, it's probably not a good idea to tell you that maybe you ought to comb your hair a different way. You're probably not going to listen.
Oh, that's good. Did you get that one?
I can relate to that.
Hmm?
I can relate to that one.
Get that
to
it just...
It's my life in the theater.
Yeah.
You don't like that.
It's not that I don't like it. Because I was caught up in my... I am.
So then you say that, I see that I am caught up.
Yeah.
Do I choose to keep doing this, or do I want to practice kindness here? Is it kind to you to be caught up?
No, probably not.
No. So why am I not practicing kindness to myself? Why am I not taking a holiday from being caught in this?
Because I'm trying to figure it out.
But sometimes if you keep figuring something, you can't figure it out. If you let it go for a moment and go walk in the woods or something, suddenly the answer will come. Won't it? Do you know that?
Yeah.
Anybody not know that in this room? Do we all know that?
Mm-hmm.
That if you're trying to figure something out, you're so intent on getting an answer, and you already have an idea of what you want the answer to be. Is that true?
Mm-hmm.
That you can't hear any other answer. If you have your answer and then you let it go and you do something else, then when another answer comes, you'll hear it differently.
Yeah, I mean,
if you're causing yourself suffering, that's not particularly smart, is it?
Not overly, but it's a...
habit?
It's a habit.
Oh, well, are you enjoying it?
Not anymore.
Oh, okay, so what do you want to do? Do you want to see it as a habit and say, oh, I think I'll practice kindness?
I would like to do that, but... just...
well, then when will you start?
I don't know.
How about right now? Just for a moment, feel your body. Can you feel your back?
Yeah.
And can you feel your vertebrae? You know they're there, right?
I know they're there.
And can you think to yourself, how nice that I have a back with vertebrae? And really be grateful. Imagine not having it. Say, how nice that I have a back with vertebrae. That should be easy for you. You've had enough experience with woundedness physically, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it nice that your back works so you can wiggle your foot?
Mm-hmm.
And open yourself to that. Is that hard to do?
Yeah.
Why?
I haven't got an answer.
Because you can't make your mind go there, or what?
Probably I can't make my mind go there. That's...
okay, but can you feel your thumb in your pocket?
Mm-hmm.
So isn't that nice that you have a thumb? You can feel that, can't you?
Mm-hmm.
What do you need a thumb for? Writing, right? Eating.
Yeah.
How nice to have a thumb. May all beings have a thumb. That almost softened you for a minute, didn't it?
Almost. I caught myself.
That was a little closer, wasn't it?
I caught myself.
Yeah. You see it? You see that you can make a choice? For no reason at all, you're not giving anything up, you're just letting your mind turn to something else that is pleasing or you're grateful for. And then if you want to go back to the other, you can, but you're actually choosing how to ride the horse.
Yeah, but you keep coming back to the same thing.
That's... yeah, and then you keep going back to something that you're grateful for.
Okay.
When people come and they're learning how to meditate, for the first time they're learning how to meditate, they say to me, well, I'm watching my breath, but then all these thoughts come. And I say to them, but every time you're watching your breath, it's the first time. They say it happens over and over. I say, no, it doesn't happen over and over. There's only ever the first time, right now. Oh, right now. Oh, right now.
Okay, that's your arising and falling away.
There's only the present moment.
Okay, that's what you're
now,
talking about.
Now, now. Okay. That's all there is. Now, oh, this is it. Oh, this is it. There's no past, no future. There is only now. And in fact, that's true. It's only our brain that goes past and future. Based on the past, projecting it into the future. The present moment has 1,000 different possibilities. And then we get stuck on one that we're habituated to. Don't we? Yes.
Seems to me if I was asking a question and I couldn't get the answer, then I should stop asking that question.
Yeah, and turn your mind to what? Why not kindness?
Yeah, like an attention instead of a question.
Yeah, just a kindness. How do I be present in the moment?
Coming.
If you bring yourself present in the moment,
yeah,
it's more likely an answer that you haven't let in before will come.
Or maybe it's just the wrong question.
Or no
questions.
Doesn't
matter. There are no wrong questions. Mm-hmm. Questions are fine, but then to actually try to get an answer to them is not fine. To pose a question is brilliant. That's how you do meditation. You pose a question, then you do your practice, and then at the end you ask your question again. And sometimes an answer comes like that. Didn't you ever learn that about meditation? I think so. You didn't? Oh.
Try it.
I learned to ask a question that wasn't a question. That was really profound.
Yeah. Leave the mind open.
Yeah. Just feel like whatever it feels like to ask a question and then just drop the question and just keep the mind open.
Yeah, because that gets all the opinions out of the way.
Yeah, it stops the chatter.
Amen.
I did that walking and I was chattering and I said, jeez, I'm sick of this. And then I don't forget why, I just had this insight and I said, why don't I ask a question? But then I thought, why don't I ask a question but not really ask a question, just...
Be questioning.
Yeah, it worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It's great. Walking around here. Sort of. It's great.
Exactly. So is that perfectly unsatisfactory, Bob?
Perfectly. You got me confused again.
Why?
Well, no.
About?
No more than...
Usual?
Yeah, no more than usual.
And you turned up enough, could you?
So here he calls step number two volitional formations, which here in most translations is called rebirth-linking volitional, rebirth-linking karma, or rebirth-linking volitional, he calls the formations. Mental concocting, which is much more accurate, I think. Do you understand why I think that?
Just taking bits and 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 putting it together. And
yeah.
Well, it's also the idea that there are innumerable threads all come together at the same time.
Yeah.
It's not like one big thing.
No.
It's just, yeah. So it really is bits.
Yeah. Yeah. A little more space in it. Exactly. And with mental concocting as a condition, consciousness arises. When you have a sort of a feeling, a quality, an urge, a desire in one direction or another, your eyes will see that. Remember willful blindness?
Yeah.
The river? The guy talking about the river?
The sides of the banks getting steeper and steeper.
Yeah. Because then we see what we expect to see.
I guess I'm just, could you just say that again, just that phrase?
Okay, with mental concocting as a condition, consciousness arises.
Okay, and then when you explained it, it sounded like consciousness then goes in a particular direction.
And it sees, and okay. It will perceive, then with okay. Consciousness arises, consciousness is a condition, mentality, materiality arises, mind, subject, object.
Okay. So if there's no mental concoction, there's no consciousness?
No, there is consciousness, but if there isn't already a propensity to see a certain thing, then you're not going to look for that object.
Okay, so then...
You ever looked for your car keys, and you knew where they were, but they weren't there?
Yeah.
You walked past them 20 times?
Yeah, I get that part. The consciousness arising also implies it has a direction.
It's arising based on the mental concoctions.
Okay.
The mental concoctions, and then, I got to go and pick up some milk at, I got to go to Olds. Okay, I better go. Oh, where are my car keys?
Mm-hmm.
And then an idea about where they are.
So there's no mental concoction.
Yeah, that's a mental concoction.
Okay.
I'm just saying in the back of my mind that will be going on, you need milk.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, don't forget to feed the birds.
So is there ever a time when there isn't mental concoction?
Uh,
So what's the concept?
According to the Buddha, who said, I too use concepts, but I'm not fooled thereby.
They're always there. Okay.
When they are present, whether or not, whether you see them like you see your perceptions, as based on the past, moving toward the future, or whether you actually believe that what you perceive is real, is a very good question, isn't it? And that basically your question from a point of view of Buddhism would have to be say that there isn't any way to answer it, because it's inexpressible. How a person who is enlightened sees perception. And like the Buddha saying, I too use concepts, but I'm not fooled thereby. So what how he sees concepts must be quite different than I do or you do. Is that okay? How are we doing here? Everybody okay? With mental concocting as a condition, consciousness arises. With consciousness as a condition, mentality, materiality arises. So then, like, mind-body.
Mm-hmm.
With mind-body arising as a condition, the sixth sense basis, and then the eyes start, ears, everything starts operating. And with mental mentality arising, then... sixth sense basis arising, contact, then you're going to hear what you thought you heard, or see what you thought you saw, or taste what you thought you tasted, or not taste it, or not hear it. Or... Is that clear? Did I lose you?
No. Still working with the linkage.
It's describing something that happens in a microsecond.
Microsecond.
And then another microsecond. And that links together to make you really believe that it's true and real and has
there's nothing, it's a steady flow. Mm-hmm. There isn't any parts to it.
Yeah.
You don't see the steps. You're on a slide.
Yeah. So the concoction must be percolating all the time then.
Basically,
so you have multiple
basically,
layers of movement happening.
And depending on which mind state is the self. And
so supporting circumstances.
Oh, yeah. And everything is dependent. The whole thing is interdependence. It's pretty amazing to try to look at this, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's very brave of me to try to teach it. But I think it's worth it, having at least, you know, start chipping into it a bit so that maybe it'll turn around a few times.
The more you examine it, the more when you get caught, you can see the illusion that's catching you.
That's true.
And that even when you're caught, and you know you're caught, and you're damn well not going to let go because you're caught.
You can actually be aware of it.
90% of you is right anyway. Yeah. Or whatever the story is.
There's but still that little 1% that goes, by the way,
yeah, you're doing
you're
this
caught
again,
now.
Aren't you?
Yeah. This is caughtness. No, I. Well, this is caughtness.
You know, on subtle levels, it just clouds your perceptions of everything. So you don't see things in a... You could see things in a really dull and clouded, ugly sort of way all the time, because that's how you dress them up as the concoctions put together the wardrobe to put on your view at the moment.
Yeah. Which is why in Buddhism there are some schools of Buddhism that believe hell really does exist. And there are some schools that say, yes, it really exists, and people are walking around in hell that you think are not in hell. Because it's a mind state. It's heaven is a mind state. It's, you know, people who are living in a special little place, or people that are living in another kind of special little place that isn't quite so attractive. And we all know that. We've all been in hell. We've all been in heaven, haven't we? We've all had moments of great ecstasy and all moments of great pain and sorrow. Well, I have, I'm sure. I hope you have.
What it's making me think of is this last year has been the big question for me is where is the line between conscious and unconscious? And it was really just the circumstances of the year with Daisy having cancer and just going through the stress of that. So being under incredible amount of stress and seeing how, without even being aware of how much stress, but feeling kind of fuzzy. And then the stress for, test result would come back and be good. And the stress would be released and you go, whoa. Wow, there was a lot of stuff going on, but nothing I was conscious of. So that's what it's making me think of with the, the mental concoction is
exactly.
All of this stuff bubbling,
yeah.
And whether it's because it's going by, it's happening so fast, or whether it's because of, it's where's that kind of line of how much of it are you aware of,
and how much of it do you want to be aware of, or how much do you not want to be aware of? Which is the thing, like places like Al-Anon or people that gather together who all have cancer or something, where you actually get to talk and then you start being able to identify your own stress because you can see it in someone else. So those things of people coming together to talk are very, very, they fill a gap that since we've become so good in our communities of building fences, we don't have anymore. We don't all go to the same wall. Well, to get our water together and end up talking to each other while we're waiting for our turn to pump, or
And then the part that's been interesting is once the stress is off, the pressure's off, then you can kind of say, well, I wonder how much is out there. I wonder how much of when I feel that I'm aware, how unconscious am I?
Yeah.
Exactly. That's interesting.
It's really interesting, Jack. Any other? Observations, questions, answers, or comments? Complaints? With contact as a condition, feeling arises. Feeling is like, dislike, neutral, mind, pleasure, pain, body. There are five feelings. Physical, two, pleasure or pain. Mental, like, dislike, or neutral. You could say that certain areas of the body are neutral because they're neither pleasure nor pain, but that's not the same thing as a mind being aware of something but not being liking or disliking. You remember the pinching the arm thing? I hope. Were you here for that?
What's that?
Pinching the arm?
Pinching the arm? No.
I had to do it again. Oh, goody. Okay.
Wrong answer, eh?
Everybody ready? I've got to undo all my buttons. I can do it with it. So you have a right forearm?
A right forearm, yeah.
Good, let's see it.
Yeah, right here.
You have a left hand?
Yeah.
Okay, so pinch your right forearm really, really hard. Wait until I say to start. And while you're pinching it, look at it and really dislike the feeling. Start. Pinch, dislike it. Really dislike it. Look at it. Okay, let go. Shake. Shake both arms. Okay, other arm.
This one too? Pinch it?
Now wait. what you're going to do is you're going to pinch it really, really hard, but you're not going to look at it and dislike it. You're going to look around the room and see what colors you like, or, you know, see how nice it is to be back in the house here with everybody, or how happy I am to see you, or whatever, right? Okay, pinch, pinch, and look around the room and see something that you like that's beautiful. Keep pinching, and then let go. Okay, which one hurt the worst?
This guy.
Why?
Concentrating on it.
You disliked it.
Yeah.
You can concentrate as much on this one, but you tend to dislike it, so it's easier to... You could still feel the pinching,
yeah,
but it didn't hurt as much,
yeah,
because your mind was not interested. So that's like, dislike, and neutral. The mind that's neutral about the pain isn't particularly interested in it. You can still feel it, but you're not bothered by it. It's just like, oh yeah, I'm aware of the pain. Yeah. So that's neutral mind. There, everybody's been pinched.
Ouch.
So there are five feelings if you're a Buddhist. You only have five feelings. Pleasure and pain of the body, like, dislike, and neutral of the mind. Emotions, what we call emotions, are actually in Buddhism called mind states. They're like, you know, emotions are like mind states. Like, dislike are not mind states, they're physical feeling. Although, in certain ways of looking at Buddha Dharma, she lost her jacket. In certain ways of looking at Buddha Dharma, the five aggregates are not the same thing as, if you look at what they call the mental commitments, sometimes there are 50, sometimes there's 51, sometimes there are 52. Those are the mind states. There's 52 if they include feeling and perception. But feeling and perception, there is another way of defining a mind-body, and that's it has five main parts: form, feeling, perception, mental formations, and consciousness. So they're called the five aggregates. So if feeling and perception, if you're talking about being in terms of the five aggregates, then feeling and perception are not considered to be the mental formations. I'm just telling you that in case you ever get confused by it when you're reading Buddhist stuff. Is that okay? So you don't have to, you know, if you're not interested in reading Buddhist stuff, you can just do a race on that bit. So, with the sixth sense base as a condition, contact arises. With contact as a condition, feeling arises. Physical, pleasure, pain. Mental, like, dislike, or neutral. So you can see something or hear something and it can be quite neutral to you, not the least bit interesting. Isn't that true?
Yeah.
With feeling as a condition, then craving arises. Well, I want to get away from... Oh. With craving as a condition, attachment arises. Any problem with any of this so far?
So but you can be attached to being isolated and all quiet and cozy, and you don't want to be interrupted by the thing, or you can want it because it's so yummy you just can't eat enough of it, or whatever.
Yeah.
Both ways is the same thing, craving.
Or attachment to follow your usual pattern.
Yeah, to go to sleep again.
Yeah. With attachment as a condition, becoming arises the next moment. Then that's when the the next mind state will arise based on the past one. With attachment as condition, becoming arises. There's movement toward the attachment. Some people I know are very attached to being separate. And they will be really, really friendly until you get friendly back, and then suddenly they're gone. Because it scares them. They're not sure who they will be if they open their doors. Whoever made them, that's like a habit.
Okay, so so attachment is present, so you're either you're following something, either in a, you know, a good or
there, yeah,
either
something
an attachment or aversion to it, but you're following.
Yeah.
You're fixated on something. What is the becoming?
Becoming is you move toward it, or you have the desire to move toward it, or that,
okay.
That starts
so,
an activity,
okay. So
starts karma, starts
main,
action.
The main condition has changed to the thing you're attached to, and a new becoming starts, because
yeah.
It's a new condition. Because whatever you had been attached to, you've moved on.
Maybe you keep doing
maybe
the same one.
Or
slightly
you're
different every
on.
Time.
You're,
huh?
You're juggling five of them.
Yeah.
Okay, but that's the becoming, is
yeah.
the condition,
yeah.
The attachment creates the next
moving
condition.
Moving toward becoming.
Okay.
With becoming as a condition, birth arises. Then there's the next identity. Right? Being born again, doing that again, or whatever. We're all born again all the time. Born again Buddhist, born again Cecily.
Can't wait for somebody to ask me that one.
With becoming as a condition, birth arises. With birth as a condition, then impermanence, old age, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, meaning the dissolution of whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
Dissolution is continuous. Whatever is conditioned is impermanent.
So
whatever arises dependent on causes and conditions is changing all the time, because the causes and conditions are shifting all the time.
So it's becoming.
With becoming as a condition, birth arises.
Okay, so
with birth as a condition,
yeah,
it's conditioned birth, so therefore dissolution arises.
Okay, so what's the difference between becoming and birth?
Becoming is moving toward, birth is...
You're there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Labor and...
And delivery.
And delivery.
And birth is the next mind
yeah.
moment.
Hmm?
And birth is the next mind moment. Fully formed.
I hate to say yes or no, but I'll say yes for the moment. We'll get back to that some other time. It's more subtle, but yeah. We can be aware of any of these. We can be aware of any of the 12 steps. So with birth as a condition, old age, death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, grief, and tribulation arise. You want to join up yet? That's the mass of suffering arises. So with all of these, there's 11 joins from one to the other. And then... with birth as a condition, old age, sorrow, pain, grief, and tribulation arise. With identifying with that old age, suffering, pain, grief, and tribulation, then there arises ignorance. With ignorance, there arises. Got it? It just keeps turning. It just keeps moving. If we don't say, oh, this is pain in the back, but you say, oh, my back is sore. The difference.
Mm-hmm.
So was old age, sickness, death, were those separate ones, or were they all part of
it? It's all one. With birth
okay.
as a condition,
yeah.
old age,
yeah.
death, sorrow, lamentation,
yeah.
pain, grief,
okay.
and tribulation arise.
That's it. that's what I thought, but I just wanted to make sure.
Yeah.
It wasn't spinning away from us.
It works on the macro scale and on the micro scale.
Yeah, on all levels. Yeah.
But the reason I asked that last question was that I've often found that whole thing really confusing, because part of it is on kind of the moment by moment level, and all of a sudden it's into, oh, and then you slowly get old, sick, and die.
No,
oh,
but every moment.
I know, yeah. but yeah.
Yeah, I understand, you know, what you're,
yeah,
saying in our language.
Kind of runs through it. It's like, okay, you know, and it always seemed a little weird.
Yeah.
So,
but every moment is old aging, sickness, and dying, and tribulation.
Oh, he left.
I didn't serve the cheesecake yet.
I'll throw it away.
Whatever. I don't know, ask the first. This is going to be the in just one moment, a complete cycle of Paticca-Samuppada can roll on, or it could roll on the space of two or three moments, depending on the situation. One moment is sufficient, or it could take lifetimes. It doesn't matter, because there are many and maxi little wheels within wheels, right? Kind of like Ezekiel sticking his head through the heaven. Wheels within wheels, continuously large and small, coming into beings, existing and passing away on so many levels all at once. And no fixed identity. So that's what you learn when you do a practice of something like watching the breath or any mindfulness practice. You're able to see how many different selves arise in the period of like five breaths, aren't you? So it's not a matter of doing the breath perfectly or holding your focus. It's a matter of being aware. As you're holding the focus to want to watch the breath, to see how the mind, just all these different mind states come, just invite them to sit down and bring your mind back. Every one of the mind states is worth seeing. There is no mistake if you're watching your breath and you get distracted. There's only mistake if you think you were distracted. The minute you understand that, oh, it's always the first time. Oh, this is the first time I get to watch my breath. Oh, here's anger arising. Excellent. Sit there, anger. And is that on the in-breath or the out-breath now? Of all the mental concomitants, they each have a power. There's a beautiful TED talk about fear. I don't know if you've seen it. She talks about how the profound thing about fear is what an excellent storyteller it is. Isn't it? It can tell you exactly what's going to happen and what's going to go wrong and why it's a disaster, can't it, like that? Just a brilliant. And to be able to identify yourself as the storyteller gives you one step back from it. Oh, I'm telling this story. And what angles am I not looking at? Bring the, she calls it, the critical intelligence in and examine the story. And see if it is following something blindly, or if there's some, you know, if there's some part of it that can be shifted slightly, and then tomorrow I'll bring the TED talk and play it for you after the class. Is that a good idea? Mm-hmm. And we can look at it, and you'll see what she's saying about that, about fear, how what a good thing it is if you know how to use it. Because fear is really a good storyteller, isn't it? Huh? Do you never fear fear? Don't you dare lie to me. Yes. And doesn't it always have a story about what terrible thing is going to happen? And isn't that always a story? Because here we are. Isn't it always a story? Because here we are. Is that true? Mm-hmm. So we're looking for the worst. So that's setting up a mental concomitant, mental concoction of not being able to see anything but the worst.
I'm trying to get away from it.
Which arm hurt the worst?
don't say she hasn't done
it. We have no idea how much we influence our view of the world by like and dislike, do we? We're doing it all the time, aren't we? And to actually practice the neutral mind, to actually practice feeling your thumb or your spine or your left earlobe as if you cared. Bringing the mind to a neutral place to see what other mental concomitants can arise. It's always there. It's always a choice. It's called awareness. Otherwise, where are you going?
I don't know, ask the Lord.
That's pretty well what we do a lot of our life, isn't it?
Yeah.
The less, the worse.
Yeah.
You're probably going to hear me quote that one quite often. I like it a lot. Maybe you'll quote it a few times, too.
That's fast.
So we're done for tonight. Any questions, answers, comments, or complaints?
It's very inspiring to think that there are people who are aware, have so much awareness that they could actually describe this and experience it. It's very inspiring.
Yeah. It is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I totally agree with you. Bob, do you have a comment or a complaint or a question or an answer? Are you speechless?
No, it's just too much.
It's too much.
It's just, I get little pieces of it.
That's great. It is not an easy teaching.
Yeah.
I must have studied like probably 20 texts on this first time I heard it, and I didn't know a thing more. After those 20 texts, I had to actually sit and pay attention. To start making some little, tiny little cracks.
Yeah,
where once every 1,000 times I could see a little bit of it. But what I want to do is at least introduce it to you.
Mm-hmm.
Or introduce you to it. And I hope we can get copies of this booklet, because like I said, this is my favorite description of the teacher.
That's got a line on it, but I can't remember what that line is, but she was looking.
She got it from here. So you can look at it.
Is it very complicated? Like, is it readable? I'm just wondering if it's readable for me, you know.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. It is very, you can understand all the words, but like how they fit together, it takes a few readings.
Yeah.
You know, like, and if you do it when you feel like it every once in a while over, if you have a copy of this over a few years, suddenly it'll start going deeper and deeper and you go, oh. It is one of my favorite of the books.
It's utterly amazing how a text that you've read and you come back to it with different life experience, etc. behind you. Mm-hmm. And suddenly you go,
I don't know about, I what? I never read this. I never read this before.
You know, it just amazes me the amount of ignorance that was present last time you read it, you know, that you can now see. Yeah. Like, how did I not see that?
And then, what am I not seeing now?
Yeah.
Well, we've got all that.
That's my favorite question. Yeah. What am I not seeing now?
Yeah. Yeah, it's very interesting.
Yeah. But isn't that what a child feels? I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm going to take the next step. Every moment is a possibility for a new understanding. What about that? What about opening yourself to the joy of discovery? Surely it's an option. Hey, we're done. You notice this beautiful gold light in your hearts. And it just twinkles all through your body, up to your shoulders and down to your hips and your knees and your elbows and your head bone. This moves out all over the place, moves out all your pores, every direction, above, below, in front, behind, right, left, four quarters, fills this room. This light is just filling the room, this gold light from all of us. And it's just like, goes right through the walls, and it just goes right through the whole block, and right through Edmonton, and right through Alberta, and right through the world. So wherever there is suffering due to ignorance of body, speech, and mind, just for a moment, it's temporarily assuaged. And if you want to think of somebody that you're especially washing, just let them have it. And you think, whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. Whatever wholesomeness has been gathered by our coming together, we share it with all beings, so there is no suffering. So thank you for your great compassion.